gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the walk in the park of free speech because, you know, sometimes the weather's nice and you just go out and you walk in the park and it's nice and you freely speak. That's what we're going to do today. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage to RBN at 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Mike and or Julie will gladly take your money. All right. So this is a boomer vision. And it's not just boomer vision. It's like boomer nostalgia. So we just got done, Jeremy and Patrick and Mike Rivero. We just got done recording a show, two-part show, Patrick and Jeremy show with Mike Rivero. He's our special guest. It's an exclusive interview. It is the first interview he has granted since announcing his retirement from RBN. And that's really a great loss. You know, having lost John Stadtmiller, what, a year and a half ago? A year and a half ago, I guess. And Farron Shofi's not doing his weekend show, which really was an anchor for the weekend. These were good shows. So you're going to have to listen to the Patrick and Jeremy show. But there's good stuff on RBN. So keep listening. But we had Mike Rivero on. And obviously, you know, the first order of business was the cicada question. And after a long and heated debate, he finally admitted there's cicada supremacy. He has admitted that the cicadas are the master form of life on the planet. And with that, with that out of the way, then we could get on talking about boomer stuff. And so the first boomer issue on the agenda was obviously the, you're going to have to listen to the show, but we talked about the moon landing, which was totally real, by the way. A lot of people don't realize that, but it was totally real. And we talked about that. Where was I going with this? I had somewhere interesting I was going with this. Oh, well, I can't remember the interesting place I was going with it, so you're just going to have to follow wherever I happen to take it. But things were different. You'll have to listen to Mike's explanation about the way the moon landing was broadcast, kind of haphazard. But things were very different back then. I said we didn't have an internet. I said the internet wasn't a thing. I guess it depends on what your definition of a thing is. Because he said, well, no, there's the internet. And, there was an internet. But nobody knew about it. Nobody used it except, very, very, very few people at universities, in the military, government. Very, very few. It was extremely limited. And people weren't sharing pictures. It had not yet evolved into what it is now, which is a giant database of naked ladies. Well, I mean, that's what it became in the 1990s, was a giant database of naked ladies. What else is on there now? I don't know. I haven't looked at it ever since. But, one of the points that I was making, and I make this point from time to time, was how completely low information we were, and how, he was talking about working on the Viking mission to Mars. And, you know, he was one of the first people to see pictures that had been sent back from the Viking mission, sent back very, very slowly. You know, I don't know what... See, the Mars mission landed, I think it was like July 4th, 1976 or something like that. Like right around the bicentennial is when it landed on Mars. I think it took 2 years to get there. So 1974, what was the state of the art in modem technology? And, you know, what could they cram onto a mission? So I don't know. But I know that in, 1978 or 79, my dad showed me a modem. He was trying to explain what it did. He said he could dial into a computer from it. I had no idea what he was talking about, and it made no sense to me. But, you know, that might have been, at best, 300 bytes per second. There's 8 bytes. No, 300 bits per second. There's 8 bits in a byte. You know, each a character... Well, if you're using all caps, maybe you can get away with six bits. I think typically they're using 7 or 8 data. So you should really say 8. So how many letters can you get out of that? You're talking about 40 letters a second at most. 40 letters a second. That's pretty slow, 40 letters a second. And maybe it was only 75 BPS. I don't know. But whatever, these pictures were coming back really, really slow. Anyway, why are we talking about this? Things were different. We were low information. And, you know, if you weren't watching the last 5 or 7 minutes of the nightly newscast, you didn't know who won the game, and you weren't going to be able to find out who won the game until looking at the box score the next day in the newspaper. But if your team was playing on the West Coast, you wouldn't find out for another day after that. You know, low information, slow information. Okay, here's something. This is a walk down memory lane, nostalgia lane. Hitchhiking. When was the last time you saw somebody hitchhike? I saw somebody hitchhike this year. I hadn't seen anybody hitchhike for years, but I saw somebody, where was it? I don't know. Iowa, maybe? With their thumb out? I hadn't seen it for years. And yet, hitchhiking was a big thing for a while, and it was still a thing in the 70s. I think it really stopped. And what stopped? Why did hitchhiking stop? Why did it become no longer a thing? This is a question. And I'm going to let you think about that for a second. Maybe for a minute. I'm going to let you think about it. Why did hitchhiking stop being a thing? Why did people stop hitchhiking? There's a explanation. I've never heard anybody say it, but I'm going to tell it to you because I know it's true. Okay? Because I used to hitchhike. I've hitchhiked many, many thousands of miles. I've hitchhiked North America. I didn't go coast to coast. My dad hitchhiked. He hitchhiked after World War II. He hitchhiked from New York to California and back. That's how he got out to California, to San Francisco, by hitchhiking. And when he was out there, I think he invented Boris and Natasha from the Bullwinkle show. I think he did. I don't know. He never said he did. I have the feeling he did. But he went out there, and Ross Perot would talk about hitchhiking. Ralph Nader told me that he had hitchhiked a whole bunch. Where did he go to school? He went to school in Yale, and of course he was from Connecticut. But he said he hitchhiked a lot, and the reason he got into automobile safety was when he was on the road, he just saw so many horrific accidents that could have been prevented. Or if the accidents couldn't have been prevented, at least the injuries could have been, with airbags, with seat belts. He told me that. So hitchhiking was a big thing, and it was still a big thing in the 70s. When did it really become a big thing? Well, automobiles haven't been around forever, and I don't know if there was any hitchhiking on stagecoaches, but automobiles, you started getting automobiles driving around the turn of the century. When did you start getting long-distance traffic? My great-great-aunt Molly, she wasn't actually a blood relative, but she was married to my great-great-uncle Chester or something like that. And I never met her, but my mom always told me about her. And she knew how to drive, and she and Chester had driven out to California in like 1920, maybe before 1920, but sometime around, plus or minus 1920, she had driven out to California. And, they didn't have highways, so they weren't necessarily even on paved roads. Did they have hitchhiking then? I don't know, but they had hitchhiking in Ross Perot's day. When was Ross Perot born? He's probably born around 1920. He would have been hitchhiking in the 30s, probably. So they had this. Certainly by the 30s, it was a big thing. Probably by the 20s, it was a big thing. And it was still a big thing in the 60s and the 70s. Now, in the Depression, the thing about the Depression was there was still a lot of community. America was still a high-trust society. And so you'd pick up hitchhikers. Or somebody came by your house and said he'd work for food. You might find some chores. You might find some chores for the guy. It was a much higher-trust society. What happened? And I'll tell you what happened. It was the gays. It was the gays. The gays destroyed hitchhiking. Obviously there was stuff. Every now and then maybe you'd have some sort of horrific murder, something like that. But it was really the gays. And I hitchhiked a lot. I hitchhiked. If you were to draw a giant triangle from... I guess like Palacios, Texas to Key West, Florida to Quebec, Canada. I probably hitchhiked everywhere in between there over a course of a few years. I just hitchhiked around. And of course the problem, Key West. I mean, Key West, it's gays. But it wasn't the Key West and gays that were the problem for me, but by that time, by the 1970s, when gayness started being liberated, the gays would go out and they would look for hitchhikers. They would go out and look for hitchhikers, and so obviously I was 50 years younger back then, so. The gays would see me, young kid, long hair, and pick me up. And I didn't always know they were gay. And, I had experiences. Sometimes, I remember once going through Mississippi, there was a giant rainstorm. And then this guy, like really, really cats and dog style, and then this guy kept putting his hand on my knee. And I couldn't jump out of the car because it was raining too much. I couldn't see where the heck we were. So you had that. Another time, I know I've talked about this before. A guy picked me up. I started talking. You always talk to people if they want. Most of the people who pick you up just want company. They just, talk, make the miles go by, maybe help them stay awake. In one case, I had somebody who picked me up somewhere like in... I don't know, like Tallahassee or maybe even the Florida Panhandle, and had me drive to Jacksonville so he could sleep. Yeah, that, yeah, it was a higher trust society, but it got ruined by the gays. But this one guy picked me up, and I said, you know, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Quebec, Canada, because I legitimately had a girlfriend in Quebec, Canada. He says, no, you're not. I said, huh? He says, you're going to Atlantic City. Well, that wasn't good. And talking to him, you know, and he started having me pour him drinks and whatnot, and talking to him, I realized he was from my hometown. And he was the guy who owned this, it was like a house that was connected to a used car lot that had been condemned for construction of I-40 and something like that. And I had gone into that house. It was abandoned. It was like a haunted house. And my friends and I would go into these houses along the interstate route that had been condemned because they were, you know, that's where they built the internet. I mean, the interstate. We'd go into these houses, and this one had, like, it had porn in it. And it was weird porn. I don't remember it being gay porn, but it was, like, it was a little bit more than girly magazines. I remember that. And it was just kind of, like, the whole house had this creepy vibe to it. Well, it was that guy. It was that guy, and I was in his car, and he was saying I was going to Atlantic City. He picked me up. I think the thing was, because I was going up I-95, and Delaware, you couldn't, hitchhiking was illegal in Delaware, but I-95 only goes through Delaware for about 10 miles. And so the idea was to get somebody, you'd stand in Maryland and stick out your thumb, and hopefully somebody would pick you up and take you to over the Delaware Bay Bridge, and you get into New Jersey. And then, you know, if you got let out in New Jersey, fine. You can, hitchhiking is pretty good in New Jersey. So anyway, this guy, he must have picked me up in Maryland. And we go over the bridge, and then he starts saying, you know, I got to pour him drinks. I had to pour him, like, whiskey or something. So I'm pouring him whiskey, and then, you know, he wants me to light his cigarettes or whatever. At any rate, he's got, like, something happened, and the cigarette fell out of his mouth onto his pants, and then he spilled his whiskey, and then it's like his pants caught on fire. And so he slows down. Well, when he slowed down, I jumped out of the car. I think I've told this story before. But, I mean, liar, liar, pants on fire. So, anyway, I jumped out of the car, and I ran back, and I flagged down some other car because I, you know, he was in a Corvette? Not a Corvette. Is it a Corvette? It's a Chevy muscle car. What did they have? It wasn't the Corvette. Maybe it was the Corvette. He had one of those Chevy muscle cars that were really popular back then. Trans Am. Was it Trans Am? But I run back and I flag down these people and I say, give me a ride. Give me a ride. There's did I say the F word? I probably did. Or maybe I said homo. Some homo's after me. And they said, nah, man, we don't have any gas. I said, well, I'll give you money for gas. Whatever. Anyway, they picked me up, drove me to Cherry Hill. No. They drove me to Mount Laurel in New Jersey. I actually knew a girl in Mount Laurel. I had an ex-girlfriend in Mount Laurel. And I was able to, it was still early enough I could call her. And her parents were nice to me and actually let me spend the night, not with the girl, but let me spend the night in the house, which was pretty righteous. But anyway, that's what destroyed hitchhiking, was all the gays.
And so it begins. I'm Peter Serafin with another Liberty Minute. Representative Boebert's resolution to impeach President Biden did not get the privilege status that she was hoping for. Privilege status would have forced the House of Representatives to vote on the resolution. Instead, the impeachment was sent to committee. Technically, that means that the investigation has begun. But many bills and resolutions never come out of committee and effectively die. I don't understand why an investigation is needed. President Biden stood at a podium and told us that all of his constitutional advisors said the eviction moratorium during COVID was unconstitutional, but he was going to do it anyway. Like me, Biden is bound by an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And he openly admitted on camera that he was not going to do that. That alone should be enough to impeach any office holder at any level, regardless of party affiliation. If you own firearms, you need carry insurance. Get the most affordable carry insurance on the market, according to Pew Pew Tactical, and save 10% by using code WHITEHOUSE at protectwithbear.com. Until next time, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Not with the girl, but let me spend the night in the house, which was pretty righteous. But anyway, that's what destroyed hitchhiking, was all the gays. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't like every now and then maybe there was some sort of murder or whatever. Halloween, it was the same thing with Halloween. Every now and then there was something horrific that would happen at Halloween. But the occasional horrific thing is, you know, we still have Halloween. It was the gayness that, you know, you get these gays out there. And so that's why there's no more hitchhiking. Anyway, I have hitchhiked in other countries. I hitchhiked in Japan a lot. And the thing is, in Japan, they've got really good public transportation. I don't know if hitchhiking was really ever a thing in Japan, but they knew what it was because of American movies and maybe TV. They knew what it was, and it was so easy to hitchhike in Japan. You just stick your thumb out. They knew what you were doing, and they'd say, oh, there's a white person. I want to practice English, or just, you know, whatever. I've never talked to a white person, and they pick you up. And it was really easy. I hitchhiked in Korea, hitchhiked in China, Inner Mongolia, hitchhiked in Morocco, which was a little bit scary, hitchhiked in Bulgaria, Spain and Portugal weren't bad, hitchhiked in England and Scotland and Ireland, they were pretty good, The thing with Morocco, it's like Morocco, I've heard that if you go down south, if you get away from, maybe Casablanca is okay. But if you get down south enough, it's really, really nice. But if you're near Spain, you can take a ferry from Algeciras in southern Spain to Ceuta, which is a Spanish enclave in North Africa. You can take that, and then there's land border. Ceuta is just a tiny, tiny enclave, maybe a couple square miles. And you can take a go through the land border and get into Morocco. But the thing is, at least in the 80s, it was, you know, people were going to Morocco to take drugs. And so there was just a lot of shady business going on, and you had to be careful. And when I realized, it's like, well, I don't plan on being here long enough to go far south. And if I stay up north, there's just too much shady business, so I don't even want to be here. And I wound up in is it Tetuan? I think Tetuan is the northernmost city that's, you know, a short car or bus ride from Ceuta. And so I went there, and my driver took me. It was raining, of course. It was raining when we got to the Casbah, which we couldn't rock. And he took me into some shop I guess his friends knew, and there was some sort of scam. He'd bring people from the border. I wouldn't have even gotten into the car, but it was raining. And so he drops me off. Well, he brings me in, and they're trying to sell me rugs. And I'm like, dude, I'm hitchhiking around Europe. What am I going to do with a rug? And they say, oh, no, we'll mail it to your home. I was like, home? I'm homeless, dude. I don't got no home. Where are you going to mail it to? Well, anyway, I couldn't cop an attitude like that with them because there were more of them, and they were kind of intimidating. And they had given me some mint tea. Well, when I refused to buy anything, they started trying to charge me like $20 for the mint tea, and they looked kind of threatening. So in the end, they agreed to sell me a camel hair head-to-toe hoodie. I mean, it's like a hoodie. It had a hood, but it was made out of camel wool. And it was head-to-toe. It's like what the traditional people wore, like what the Berbers wear or something. And they'd sell it to me for, like, I think it was maybe 20 Swiss francs or 15 Swiss francs, which was about $8, which was, like, that was like a day's allowance for me. That was like a one day worth of my living. But I figured, well, I want to keep living. So I bought the, it's called a jalaba, I think. It's a jalaba. It's a head to long sleeves, and it's like a robe, and it's got a hood on it. It's actually, if it were white, it would be KKK. I guess it's kind of like a Moroccan KKK hoodie. And so it's actually cool. I mean, I've used it for Halloween. But, yeah, it was pretty cool. And I figured, well, if I put it on, they won't be able to see I'm a foreigner. Well, actually, probably only tourists wear it. So I guess the weather cleared up. And what happened first is weather cleared up. And I walked into town. And I had a Newsweek magazine sticking out of my backpack, and some guy saw it, and he wanted to practice English. And I don't remember if I spoke to him in English or French. My French was quite good at the time.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh,
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Go, 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 super balloon, Mahalo.
I think I had a Newsweek magazine sticking out of my backpack, and some guy saw it, and he wanted to practice English. And I don't remember if I spoke to him in English or French. My French was quite good at the time. And he said he would trade me lunch. He would make me lunch if I would give him my Newsweek magazine. And I thought, okay, well, I've already read it. And it's, you know, a week or two old anyway. This is the way things were back then, okay? So we go to his apartment. Now, to get to his apartment, you had to climb a ladder. It was, you know, some 200 or 300 year old building, and he lived on the second or third floor, and the way you got to it by climbing a ladder. We climb a ladder, and he cooked me some couscous or whatever, some sort of, you know, I was a vegetarian, but it was vegetables and some sort of grain, and it was pretty good. And I ate, and I think maybe relax, maybe took a nap or something, and then I left. And then it started getting dark, and it was scary again. So I wound up putting on that jalaba and hitchhiking, because I thought it might not be safe for a foreigner to hitchhike. Maybe they'll think I'm just a country person. Probably they thought I was a foreigner. I don't know. I don't know if anybody wore those such garments. You know, it was mid-1980s. Maybe there were traditional people around there. I don't know. But I was able to hitchhike back to the border with Ceuta, Spain, the Spanish enclave. So I didn't even spend the night in Morocco. I spent two nights in Ceuta and then went back to Spain and continued hitchhiking around. But that was my experience hitchhiking. So I hitchhiked in a Moroccan KKK robe. That was something. And I know I've talked about hitchhiking in Inner Mongolia with the lady comrade and catching a ride on the back of a goat manure truck, which was, frankly, that was the best time I had in China. You can't beat it. Driving through the Gobi Desert with a lady comrade on the back of a goat manure truck. Not bad. Now, just while still on the subject of hitchhiking, sometimes I wound up hitchhiking all night. Oh, I hitchhiked in Canada too, of course. Sometimes I hitchhike all night. And a couple nights later, I was hitchhiking, trying to get from Spain to Portugal. So I was somewhere in southeastern Spain on the way to Portugal, somewhere down there. And it was one of these deals where it was nice weather. It's October, not too cold. And it's just nice weather. And I wasn't getting rides. And there was no cars. There was hardly any cars. I walked past an orange grove and got some oranges. I shouldn't have taken them. But nobody ever noticed. And it was one of those things. Ate some oranges, and it was October. Is there a meteor shower that is common in October? I don't know. I mean, there are these annual meteor showers. I saw a whole bunch of falling stars that night and made a bunch of wishes. How many came true? I couldn't tell you. But anyway, that's hitchhiking. Did I ever hitchhike in Mexico? I've hardly ever been in Mexico, and I think I just took the bus. Hitchhiking in Hawaii. Oh, I hitchhiked in Ponape, which is in Micronesia, which now is the Federated States of Micronesia. It's technically its own country, but, you know, technically, but not really. It's still kind of an American dependency. All right. Where the heck am I anyway? Okay, but, Boomer days weren't just hitchhiking. What else was it? Well, if you were a kid, there was TV and a lot of it. And, you know, so we had TV, but there was only three channels, maybe four, depending on where you lived. If you had UHF reception, then maybe you'd have a couple extra there. But, yeah, not a lot of choices. And there was no VCRs, so you just had to watch whatever was on. Not a lot of selection. There are a lot of shows that were, I guess, kind of intended for the whole family. I remember a show called Hazel. It was about a maid, and she worked for the Baxters. And she was, you know, maybe in her 50s or so. And the Baxters, there was Mr. B was a lawyer, and he had a wife. And the wives on these shows were always slender, always, you know, relatively attractive and seemingly young. And then there's usually some kids. And I think she had kind of like a friendship with the butcher or something, or some grocer. I remember hardly anything about it. And was it funny? I think it was meant as a comedy. I don't know if it was ever actually funny, but television was just so hypnotizing. So you would watch these shows like Hazel, without even particularly enjoying them, but, you know, you just sit and chill in front of the TV. That's what a lot of this, I'm talking about like the 60s here. There were shows that were a little more I remember the Superman show. And some of these shows were kind of violent, I guess, if you get down to it. But there's a Superman show. What else was there? Oh, Hercules. Do you remember? So Hercules was a cartoon. The cartoons were fun. And even some of the cartoons, like the Flintstones, were not even necessarily aimed at kids. I think the Flintstones was just an animated version of the Honeymooners with Jackie Gleason. Fred Flintstone, I think, was pretty clearly based on Jackie Gleason. The whole setup was very similar to the Jackie Gleason show. But Hercules, which I've looked into it, now that we have the internet, you can look into these things. I was looking into Hercules because I've used the Hercules theme song a couple of times as outro music. And it was sung by Johnny Nash. And Johnny Nash was from California, but he sang some reggae stuff. He was a black singer. He sang, I Can See Clearly Now The Rain Has Gone, which was a very big number one smash hit in, I think, 1972. You would have heard it on Casey Kasem. Casey Kasem, friend of the show, by the way. You would have heard it on American Top 40. But it was based on Greek mythology, and that was pretty cool. As a little kid, it got me kind of interested. And so, here's something. Goku. Dragon. This isn't boomer stuff. I don't know how many people in my RBN listening audience even know about this, but there is it's actually a Japanese anime, Japanese cartoon called Dragon Ball Z, which is really popular all over the world. And I'm vaguely aware of it. The same cartoonist had done a different cartoon before that called Dr. Slump. And I use the Dr. Slump theme song as bumper music from time to time as well. It goes, Kitazo, Kitazo, Arerechan, Gin, 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 Tek, 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 Ten, Beep, Beep, Boop, Boop, Beep, Bo, Kachamo. You might recall it. I think I played it last week. When did I play it? But I think I played it last week. And, but Dragon Ball came after that. And I didn't realize that until very recently. But Goku, who is the hero, he's like a martial arts fighter, and he starts when the series starts off, he's got like a monkey tail, and Goku, like among younger people, he's a real big deal. So Andrew Anglin, at the end of one of his articles, this is a few years ago, he quoted Muhammad Ali, and Muhammad Ali, one of his famous quotes was, "You will become what you are thinking of," right? I guess the idea is if you think you're going to become great, you will become great. But you will become what you are thinking of. And Andrew Anglin ends his article saying, "Yes, and that's why I'm always thinking about Hitler and Goku," which I thought was very, very funny. So people, in their 30s, or 20s, they would absolutely know who Goku is. Who is Goku? And now I realize that Goku was this character. He was the Monkey King from this Chinese novel written in the 16th century, like 1590 or something. And that, like, all these famous buildings, like the King's Palace in Korea, or all these arches, they have these entrance arches or gates in Seoul. All these famous buildings, they all have Goku on them. The Chinese name for Goku is, what was it? It's like Wu Quan or something, Goku. But at any rate, That was weird. That's not even boomer stuff. Why am I talking about that? But, I was talking about Superman. So you had cartoons, I mentioned Bullwinkle. Now, on the same show as Bullwinkle, but like Bullwinkle and his Rocky and his friends, or the Bullwinkle show, you had these other cartoons. One was called Fractured Fairy Tales, and they included fairy tales, like Aesop's Tales, that type of stuff. But the characters would always be cracking jokes. Where am I going with this? Okay, I've just been wandering around. I have no idea where I am. I don't know what I'm doing with the show. Did you ever see Stuart Smalley? You know, I'm 30 pounds overweight and I'm going to die penniless and nobody will ever love me. Actually, maybe I do know where we are. Okay. Okay, well, anyway, I know where I am now, and there's still a little bit of time left in this show for redemption. I'm going to tell another boomer story. And this is from when I finally got a car. So I finally got a car and didn't have to hitchhike. And George and Eddie and I were going to go. We were going to go to Washington, D.C. And we went to Washington, D.C. And we went across the river into Georgetown. And we were going to go to bars, all right? Which, I don't drink. I guess, did I even drink then? I must have. I guess it was right before I stopped drinking. So this must have been right before I stopped drinking. Probably why I stopped drinking. But so we go across the river and we're going to go to bars in Georgetown near Georgetown University. I had applied to Georgetown. And so here's the thing. Now, George was a smart guy. George is actually the first guy who told me about David Duke. And I said, what, you mean that redneck? He said, this was years and years later. But he said, no, he's actually really smart. I mean, that's why they don't like him, is because he's actually intelligent and speaks well. He told me that many years later, but many years before I actually got to know Dr. Duke. So George was an intellectual. I was an intellectual. And Eddie lived at home with his mom. And his whole thing, like, you'd always be waiting for Eddie. You're waiting for Eddie. And he'd finally show up like an hour, 90 minutes late. And, you know, this is boomer stuff. Nobody had cell phones, right? And so you'd just be waiting for people. And he'd finally show up. And like, you were supposed to be here at, you know, 5 o'clock. Well, I had to eat. That was his whole thing. So we always made fun of Eddie, but at any rate, we've gone over, not Chain Bridge, what's the other bridge? Key Bridge. We've gone over Key Bridge, which goes right into Georgetown. And then it's like, okay, well, let's ditch the car because the traffic is going to be tough. It's going to be tough driving around. Let's ditch the car. And find a bar. So we turn into some, it looked like it was going to be a parking lot, it's like more or less under Key Bridge. We turn down there, and there's this guy, and he starts, oh, yeah, park over here. And he's like motioning me. And this is, you know, it's after dark. I don't know what time it was. It was summertime, but it was after dark. And so he's motioning me, yeah, no, come over here this way. And I'm like, okay. And you know, George's like, okay. But Eddie in the back is like, hey, man, he's trying to set us up. And he said, back out, get out of here. I was like, well, I guess I was already kind of inebriated. And I thought, well, okay, if Eddie says so, I'll say. So I, you know, all of a sudden put it in reverse, get out of there. And then George says, yeah, hey, they're actually guys who were coming out of the shadows. They were going to jump us. And this was the thing. So George and I always made fun of Eddie. And Eddie was a stoner. He wasn't going anywhere. He was like 21 years old and living at home with his mom, didn't have a job. But he was the one with the street smarts. And these guys, I don't even think they were black. There might have been some blacks in the shadow. This was like white shady people in Georgetown. So, and I guess I wasn't doing too well. I shouldn't have been driving. But I remember just thinking, I'm just going to, I didn't want to drive in Washington, D.C. Because, it's unfamiliar.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like The Transgender Industrial Complex, Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more, there's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBNReaders2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBNReaders2023. At antelopehillpublishing.com.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, no. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
And I guess I wasn't doing too well. I shouldn't have been driving. But I remember just thinking, I'm just going to... I didn't want to drive in Washington, D.C. Because, it's unfamiliar. But I thought, the guy in front of me looks like he knows where he's going, so I'm just going to follow him. So I wound up on this long, weird trip through Washington, D.C., following somebody because it looks like he knew where he was, or he knew where he's going. And then we went back over the river. We were in Virginia. And, I think people in boomer times, I think young people had drinking problems because going over this hill, and it's in the suburbs, and I see this, there's like a red light at the top of the hill, and then there's a bit of a commotion, and the car in front of me backs up and then like does some sort of like evasive move around something. And so then I'm making an evasive move around this stuff that was in the middle of the intersection. Well, the stuff in the middle of the intersection was a motorcycle that the girl in front of me, the car in front of me, had just hit. And the motorcycle is like, oh, get that bitch, or something like that. Get that car. And I was like, well, okay. He says, get the car. So for whatever reason, I stopped the car, got out, and chased it down on foot, which is weird. But the car wasn't going that fast, and the window was down, and it was this girl, and she was clearly drunk, and she just hit this guy on a motorcycle with a girl on the back. I think the girl was okay, but the guy wasn't. And so, like, I reach into the window, and I say, you got to stop. And she's, like, crying, and then George comes up, and I'm like, here. And I give this drunk girl to George. And then I think, all right, we got to call an ambulance. But what am I going to do? I'm sure there are people getting run over on motorcycles, like, on a daily basis here. And the neighbors are probably sick of having people go up and, you know, knock on their door asking to use the phone to call an ambulance. They're probably sick of that. So I better go look for a payphone. This is boomer stuff, okay? This is how retarded we were. And so I wound up getting back in my car and driving for like half a mile till I found a payphone, and I called the ambulance from there, and then I went back. And by that time, I think the police were there and the ambulance was there. And all right. Well, I know where I am now. I'm going to be okay. The show, but here's the golden silver lining, is that tomorrow's show is already in the bag. It's already in the can. We've recorded it with Mike Rivero. We worked out the whole CQ with the cicadas and got into a whole bunch of other stuff. Really interesting. Mike is a great guy. It's a great loss for RBN, but he'll still be doing his website, and I think we'll be hearing from him. So be sure to tune in to the Patrick and Jeremy shows, part one and part two. Part two being Tuesday night, tonight at 9 p.m. Central, and then part two being Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Central, this time slot. And enjoy. And I'll be back again tomorrow with that particular exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Hercules, hero of song and story, Hercules, winner of ancient glory, fighting for the right, fighting with his might, with the strength of 10 ordinary men. Hercules, people are safe when near him. Hercules, only the evil fear him. Softness in his eyes, iron in his thighs, virtue in his heart, fire in every part of the mighty Hercules.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details, or visit 3DBunkers.com.
This is RBN.
The Republic Broadcasting Network.